So I'm gonna speak English all the time, because the other languages that are available for us, are not that I had have command of. I would like to welcome you on behalf of the Czech presidency. But of course, the main speaker today is Mr. Maroš Šefčovič, the Vice President of the European Commission. The topic we have selected for today's discussion is very clear. Just a few technical information. I hope that we are not having too much technical problems with connection and being able to speak with with other and hearing each other. The main trouble might be on my side because I am also connected online remotely. So please, I would like to welcome again the Vice Commissioner for of the European Commission, the main speaker. Welcome you all. If actually I hope that I'll be able to see all the participants wishing to speak. So I'm actually in charge of switching over to you to enable you to speak. So I hope that I'll be able to do this. We should start our discussion right away. As you probably have noticed, the interpreting is available in English, in French, and Italian. So I am just right away giving the floor to Mr. Vice President.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, dear Mr. Benešík, all the honorable members of National and European Parliaments, dear Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. First and foremost, thank you very much for your kind invitation and for this interest to continue what I found very engaged debate we had just a couple of days ago in Prague when we had the full Cossack plenary. I think it's just a testimony to very active Czech presidency. And of course, I very much welcome also the opportunity to discuss with you the topic, which is important, I believe, for all of us. And this is our relations with the United Kingdom. Because, of course, for us, it's very important to work with the inputs from all parliaments in the European Union. And I think that it would be good to give you a debrief since we had the last time opportunity to go through this very important file because it was quite some time ago. I think that if we are looking at our relationship with the United Kingdom, it's very correct and right that we paid very close attention to it. And I very much also welcome the fact that we are not talking only the executive to executive or government to the commission, but earlier this month I was also participating in a second meeting of the EU-UK Parliamentary Partnership Assembly, which is bringing together the members of the European Parliament and the UK Houses of Parliament for already, as I said, second exchange of the views. And I think that what I took as a main conclusion or main takeaway from this meeting was that on both sides of the channel, what we want to see is a strong partnership between EU and UK. As I have already alluded to, a lot has happened since we had the last chance to discuss it with Cossack in EU-UK relations. And I think that also our discussion today is taking place in what is itself an historical turning point. In our plenary in Prague, we've been discussing in greater detail and great length a completely new situation caused by Russia's aggression against Ukraine, the importance how we can collectively defend our values and how can we maintain our steadfast support for Ukraine. And I would say this very dramatic situation, together with a strong economic headwinds, where we on daily basis are struggling to find the best possible solutions for our citizens and for our businesses across the Europe, if it comes to rising energy and food prices, and to suppress the inflation pressures in Europe, there should be a clear rationale for strengthening of the collaboration between EU and UK. And I have said it already many times, but I think it bears repeating, that the European Union is seeking to build a strategic, enduring and mutually beneficial partnership with the United Kingdom. Of course, in full respect of our international agreements, notably the latest ones, like withdrawal agreement, including of the protocol on Ireland and Northern Ireland, and of course the trade and cooperation agreement. Because, and I know that you've been following this process very closely, they've been negotiated together, and I can really tell you line by line, in very detailed discussions, we agreed upon them together. They've been ratified by both sides, and I would add one very important element, and that's the fact that the agreement for us in the EU embody the trust which needs to exist between us. Nowhere is that more evident than when it comes to the outstanding issues that are around the implementation of the problem Ireland and Northern Ireland. From the very beginning, the EU has shown genuine understanding for the practical difficulties on the ground. And we've been engaging on my level, on the level of our services, on the level of my colleagues, commissioners, with all stakeholders in Northern Ireland to better understand the issues they face. And of course, we had the similar discussions with our friends in Ireland. And it has not changed. We continue to do that, and we work very, very closely with all communities in Northern Ireland, and of course with our Irish friends. And we are indeed committed to work constructively and intensively on joint solutions to create legal certainty, predictability that the people and businesses in Northern Ireland need and deserve. The good news is that on this front, after months of UK failing to engage with us in any meaningful discussion, we have restarted EU-UK engagement on the joint way forward together with my new counterpart, Foreign Secretary James Cleverly. What is the key that this new constructive atmosphere between us and in our conversation will be now translated into action? So what I'm saying is, what we need to do is to turn the more positive mood into actual joint solutions. On our side, we already have very solid proposals on the table, which we fleshed out in great detail. And now we would like to see with a reciprocal approach from our UK partners. More generally, if I should sum up our general line of approach to our UK partners, it would be that it's based on the principle for our engagement, which is the stronger the reassurances, stronger the safeguards for the protection of the single market, the bigger the flexibility can be at our end. But I also have to make one thing very, very clear. We will never sacrifice the integrity of our market or of our union. I believe that our respective positions are definitely not the world's part away. And I'm absolutely convinced that if there is a political will, we can genuinely explore the EU's robust proposals to simplify and facilitate the trade between East and West, while ensuring no hard border between North and South on the island of Ireland. Such a scenario, of course, would preclude any recourse to unilateral action, such as Northern Ireland Protocol Bill, which is kind of making it through its way through the Houses of Parliament in London, because this bill would effectually disapply the core elements of the protocol. And of course, if this bill were to become a law, the UK government would put the Northern Ireland's union access to the EU single market of 450 million consumers at risk. And it would be a very clear breach of both its international obligations and the trust between us. It would mean depriving Northern Ireland of an incredible opportunity. And we think that this should not happen, and we should focus on the contrary, on full exploitation of the unique position that Northern Ireland enjoys right now. And this is access to both UK internal and Europeans single market, which could be best described as the best of both worlds, which makes Northern Ireland right now the unique place on this planet with access to more than 500 million consumers, which is already right now a magnet for business opportunities and foreign investments. On the other side, the unilateral disapplying of core principles and core parts of the protocol would have serious consequences for our trade relationship under the Trade and Cooperation Agreement with the UK, due to its fundamental link with the withdrawal agreement. And I was already referring to the importance of the trust between two of us. Of course, if something like this would happen, it would be seen as very negative development. And I would say that this would further aggravate even current difficult economic conditions on the both sides of the channel. What I would like also to bring into the bigger picture is the fact that next year there will be very important anniversary to mark and I hope to celebrate. And this is 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Belfast Agreement. As a diplomat, I was, of course, following very carefully all those negotiations, the referendum, and the enormous economic success which brought the peace and prosperity to the island of Ireland. And if I look at the next anniversary, and we are talking about April 2023, I believe that it should be indeed an opportunity to look ahead and to make the next 25 years both about the peace, but also this time about prosperity for Northern Ireland. And we as the EU would be more than happy to contribute to that. Our commitment to the Good Friday Belfast Agreement is rock solid. It remains unwavering. It's a bedrock of our action. And we want to make sure that the protocol, which is protecting the hard-earned gains of the peace process in Ireland, would contribute, as I said, not only to peace, but also to the prosperity, because what is important for the EU is to solve this matter and to demonstrate also through this that the European Union is at heart a peace project itself, as we all very well remember, born out of ashes of war. So at the time where those ashes have unfortunately and tragically reappeared again on our continent, peaceful and joint cooperation between like-minded countries is, to my mind, more important than ever. If you allow a few words on the trade and cooperation agreement, which forms the good basis for the strategic relationship as you would like to see it and to develop it. I'm glad to say that it's nearly 2 years implementation is going well. Practically all institutional arrangements required by trade and cooperation agreement are in place. I'm talking about different subcommittees and specialized committees. And what I want to underline is that TCA is very good, very important agreement, but of course it can never be a replacement for the EU membership, because leaving both the single market and the customs union, it was a deliberate choice of the UK, which we respected, but of course it has its consequences, and because of these steps the trade cannot be as frictionless and as dynamic as before, and unfortunately it results in additional costs for both UK and EU businesses. Even allowing for the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, the impact on Brexit on trade between EU and UK is starting to show more clearly, not only because our trade has stagnated, but also because Brexit has increased rather than decreased the red tape, and I have to say, on both sides. So this is the new reality. This is how the United Kingdom wanted this partnership to be shaped and forged. So I think it's nothing we should regret. We need to accept it, and we need to adjust to this new reality. Looking ahead, of course, United Kingdom is entitled to further diverge from the EU and from our regulatory framework if it wishes to do so. But as we have seen over the last couple of years, more divergence will carry even more costs and will further deepen the barriers to trade between EU and UK. And just to put it in a nutshell, more divergence means more friction and less trade. I mean, it's as simple as that. And again, of course, not ideal in the time of severe economic strain. Having said that, I believe that we have a mutual interest in trade and cooperation agreement to work well. After all, the European Union and the UK is UK's biggest trading partner, and United Kingdom is EU's third biggest trading partner. So we are important for both of us, and therefore we should do our utmost to respect and use the framework of the trade and cooperation agreement as much as possible. So to conclude, honorable members, I remain convinced that the stable and positive relationship between European Union and United Kingdom, based on international agreement signed and ratified by working very hard for that. I hope that there will be the same effort from the side of our UK colleagues. What we welcome as a token of, I would say, this further developing relationship is the fact that the British Prime Minister participated in the first ever European political community, which brought in beautiful Prague the leaders from the EU and close European partners to demonstrate our political community, our mutual understanding, and our strive to make our mark on global politics and in this new geopolitical landscape of today. I think that the meeting in Prague was a very powerful statement of unity at the time when our most cherished and fundamental values and peace are being challenged or targeted, and I think that should be the top priority we should all follow, because if you look at the heart of all our efforts and what we have in common with the UK, this is our commitment to democracy, this is our commitment to rule of law, this is our commitment to fairness and respect of human rights. So therefore, I hope that the very important step setting up the European political community. Participation of UK in this very important meeting will just be a positive prelude to what are discussions and negotiations we have right now with our UK partners, so we can resolve all outstanding issues linked with protocol, linked with trade, so we can focus on brighter and more prosperous future and cooperation between the EU and United Kingdom. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you so much. Probably it's not a secret that when I mentioned that you are from the Slovak Republic, I'm from the Czech Republic, and I think the example of our split up back 30 years ago was an example of a very peaceful and very, I don't know how to call it even, normal split up, and even today we have, I would say, maybe the best relations of among all the European nations of the European Union, because, we just, in a way, because maybe of our history and mutual relations, back then, managed it. So the issue of the Irish border is, something that bothers us a lot. Well, there is, an addition to it, which is both countries, the Slovak Republic and the Czech Republic, are very open economies, and we believe in free market. And that is one of the, I would say, the most visible benefit of our membership in the European in the European Union of both the Slovak and the Czech Republic. So this is a key element for us, that we keep our economies open. We try to have our relations, with the UK, best possible in every way. But it's not only about business. It's not only about trade. It's also about safety, and this is very important. When Brexit actually was happening, the Czech Republic was very vocal in saying, we hope that we are losing a member, but we are not losing an ally. And I think that, everybody on this floor will keep it in mind. So thank you for your words. And I just would like to remind to everybody participating in this debate that for the Slovaks and the Czechs, this is very important issue, and we have very similar experiences with a not very easy breakup. And I am very grateful to you that you have mentioned the Good Friday Agreement. This is key, because without security and friendship and really, very close relations between neighboring states, neighboring countries, you just cannot have security. And security is so closely linked to economic prosperity. So that is my opening comment on what Mr. Šefčovič has just said. I'm not seeing anybody. Maybe I am. Who would like to participate in our discussion? Is there anybody who would like to comment? Oh, I can see you. I can see you, Mrs. Legib. But I'm just trying to give you the floor. You know, it's taking a bit of time. Maybe can we hear you?
Can you hear me, Mr. Chair?
I can hear you. I hope the others can hear you as well.
Okay. Yes, I can hear you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Vice President. I'm sorry, I'm not able to see if I'm supposed to be the first speaker or if there is another list. I can see one of my French colleagues from the National Assembly who's willing to take part in our conversation as well. Thank you for the kind words and for the very nice presentation you made both, and Mr. Vice President also dealing with the importance of the future and already launched political European community and the importance of the participation of the United Kingdom in that European political community. You know that for the French authorities, for the French Parliament, it is a very important message to have been able to launch this European political community and also to have the chance to have the United Kingdom within the participants of this European political community. It is a good and positive sign for the future. If you allow me, I will switch to my native language. I will switch to French as I'm speaking here in the French National Assembly. And if you allow me, if the interpreters are ready, I will switch to the French language. Très bien. Merci beaucoup pour
well, thank you very much for this opportunity to pursue this dialogue with you. What I want is partly to express my feeling that il y a beaucoup d'hommes politiques ou de femmes politiques qui représentent
are
able to speak in a way which is much more open, much more positive.
When des États membres de l'Union européenne, à commencer par celui dont je suis issu, la France, nous voyons une nouvelle chance et une nouvelle ère pouvoir certainement s'ouvrir dans les relations entre les deux côtés de la Manche, entre l'Union européenne et le Royaume-Uni. Et donc nous sommes dans un moment, je dirais, de positive attitude, mais où nous espérons beaucoup du nouveau Premier ministre et du changement de ton, mais qui, nous l'espérons, ne sera pas qu'un changement de ton. Moi, je voulais venir très rapidement à un sujet particulier, comme je vous ai, et je m'en excuse, rejoint un tout petit peu en retard, je n'ai pas forcément entendu cela. Y a-t-il, et où en sommes-nous, de l'éventuelle procédure d'infraction engagée par la Commission européenne à l'encontre du Royaume-Uni au sujet du protocole relatif à la situation de l'Irlande du Nord? Je ne suis pas très, très au clair sur ce sujet, et c'est un sujet de préoccupation que celui de l'application pleine et entière de ce protocole Nord. Vous le savez certainement, c'était un point d'inquiétude majeur pour l'Union européenne, également pour Michel Barnier, qui a été le négociateur en chef de l'Union européenne. Et donc, je voulais simplement vous demander de redire, si je ne l'ai pas entendu, ou de dire s'il y a eu une procédure d'infraction envisagée et où en est-elle. Voilà. Merci infiniment.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your words. I have just received the list of speakers, so I'll be able to actually name you and ask you for the floor. Just please be very patient with me. You know, my sight after COVID, you know, deteriorated in a huge way. So I was able to use my glasses, you know, that are short-sighted, you know, for reading, but now it's not possible. So then it is why it, you know, takes a bit of time. So thank you for your patience, sorry. I'm not quite sure whether our dear colleague Liliana Tagi is online.
Yes, I'm online. Hello.
Sorry. You know, that was the problem I was just describing. Sorry for that. Please have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. Like my colleague Constance, I will speak in French because I'm in the French Assembly. Mes chers collègues, dans le cadre de l'accord post-Brexit, il était prévu que les pêcheurs européens puissent continuer d'exercer leur activité au large des côtes britanniques après avoir obtenu une licence délivrée par les autorités britanniques. Cependant, de nombreux pêcheurs, notamment français et également bretons, je suis députée du Finistère, donc un département breton, n'ont pas pu obtenir cette licence parce qu'ils ne remplissent pas toutes les conditions exigées et n'avaient pas pu fournir les justificatifs. Donc la France a régulièrement souligné le manque de bonne volonté du Royaume-Uni et les tensions diplomatico-commerciales qui ont continué durant l'été. Alors, pour de nombreux pêcheurs, l'activité de pêche dans les eaux britanniques représente une part importante de leur chiffre d'affaires sur laquelle ils ne peuvent plus compter. Et il convient dès lors d'accompagner ces pêcheurs afin d'amortir les très graves conséquences du Brexit. Et la Commission européenne a autorisé en août dernier un régime français d'aide d'État d'un montant de 60 millions d'euros. Ce dispositif financé par l'Union européenne permettra de soutenir les pêcheurs ayant mis un terme à leurs activités de pêche dans les eaux britanniques. Alors je voudrais saluer ici l'engagement des autorités françaises et européennes auprès de nos pêcheurs. Mais cependant, des difficultés importantes subsistent et donc les pêcheurs craignent de se voir imposer de nouvelles mesures techniques par les autorités britanniques et d'autre part, la réduction de 25% d'ici 2026 des quotas de pêche européens dans les eaux britanniques menace la durabilité des ressources halieutiques avec un risque de surpêche dans les eaux européennes. Alors, monsieur le commissaire, ma question est, comment percevez-vous l'avenir de la pêche européenne? La Commission envisage-t-elle de nouvelles mesures de soutien à nos pêcheurs? Et la décarbonation de la flotte ainsi que la formation des jeunes pêcheurs sont-ils par exemple un des enjeux clés? Je vous remercie.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your comment. I fully understand your comments. Actually, for someone who is from the from the inland of the European Union, we have never been able to fully understand, you know, how difficult this issue for you is, and you know, with Brexit, we now have a much better understanding of the fishery industry, which actually we were unable to fully tackle before Brexit. So we see and we understand that this is something that is really very important, not only from a mental point of view, but from the economic point of view, and we believe that it's not only France but also other countries that, you know, need to solve these problems, you know, in a sufficient way. Well, the next speaker, if I can see correctly, is Constance Lagrippe, who spoke, you know, a few minutes ago. Is that true?
Constance Legris, that's correct. Legris.
Yeah. So you don't want to make any other comments?
No, not for the moment. No, not for the moment. I just had that very specific question on the protocol, but no other comment. No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. And then, the next speaker is Denitsa Simeonova of Bulgaria.
Chair, thank you also to Mr. Vice President for the briefing. I'll be very brief on behalf of the Committee on EU Affairs at the National Assembly of the Republic of Bulgaria. I would like to express our high appreciation of the efforts of the Commission to guarantee not only the impact on the trade between the Union and the UK, but also to guarantee the rights of EU citizens in the United Kingdom. For us, for Bulgaria, it is very important to ensure that the rights of all EU citizens from all EU countries and member states will be protected and guaranteed. And of course, I do agree with everything that the former speakers have said in this direction. And I would like to thank again for this meeting and the opportunity to discuss the topic. Thank you.
Denitsa, so thank you so much for your comments. And I'm now pretty sure that Anton of Germany is actually on the list and would like to speak. So Anton, you have the floor.
Thanks a lot. Hope I can be heard. Thanks a lot, dear Commissioner, for all your comments. And for us, it's especially important, beside Great Britain, is really important now for security of whole of Europe, that we really protect on the one side, the Good Friday Agreement, and on the other side, the internal market. And we see in the Northern Ireland Protocol that Great Britain came up with the idea to have a border in the Irish Sea. I can understand for Great Britain that it's complicated to have a border, the kind of border within their own country, but it was a decision of Great Britain to leave the European Union and to leave the common market. And I don't see any other possibility when we want to protect the Good Friday Agreement. I think it's really important to protect it. And when we want to protect our common market, then somewhere the border has to be, and the only possibility is in the Irish Sea. I think we should do all our best to make it as simple as possible. I see that the European Commission tries to help Great Britain where it can, but for us it's important that we can protect both, and I would like to have trust to the British government, and I hope the new government is more trustful than the government of Boris Johnson was. And so I would be interested, because I heard a lot of positive signals from the new British government now. Do you also have the feeling that the new British government is more interested on a better condition also on the Northern Ireland Protocol and this issue with the European Union than it was before? I hope it will be, and I would really be interested in your comment on this.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I'd like to just to remind you that Mr. Commissioner is in a rush. He's having a meeting quite shortly. So please, if you can make your comments as short as possible, it'll help our discussion in a great way. And Giulio Maria has the floor right now of Italy. So Giulio Maria, you have the floor.
Thank you. react with any appropriate measures as far as the trade agreement is concerned. We note many difficulties for EU companies, rising prices, difficulties in trade flows, which were severely affected by the pandemic. And in the post-Brexit era, also the regimes to be applied to imports have to be clearly defined. I fully share a recent opinion by the European Parliament. More strict and coordinated relations and the UK should be achieved. More coordination is needed in our bilateral relations. And on 15 November last, the European Council decided the following. In the light of the war in the Ukraine, the Council decided to allow the UK participation in the PESCO's military mobility project. And it is out of question that the war in the Ukraine showed that we need to have rapidly deployable troops within the European Union so that the EU and NATO can better respond to the current crisis. So we would like to know about the position of the European Commission in relation to the position of the British Prime Minister, Sunak, in relation to UK's attitude and approach to China, which is fundamental for the relations between the UK and the European Union. And I would like to recommend to keep a strict focus on the rights of citizens. This topic is of high priority to us. There are still criticalities, difficulties, delays, misinformation for EU travelers in consideration of the pre-settlement scheme. So, also, we need to monitor the rights of the citizens enjoyed by citizens in the UK before the Brexit. And also the beneficiaries of the withdrawal agreement and the new schemes approved by the UK in relation to migrants, to the free circulation movements of citizens is concerned. So we would like the Commission to make huge efforts to keep an eye on this situation so that all EU member states can safeguard the rights of their own citizens in the UK. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I really hope that we'll have a bit of time to actually respond to your questions and issues you have just raised. And right now, I'd like to give the floor to your colleague of the Chamber of Deputies of the Senate of the Italian Republic, Alessandro Giulio Vigna.
I would like to convey my greetings from Rome to all our colleagues and to the Vice President of the Commission. Your words were really encouraging and sounded very positive, and we are particularly happy about that. Unfortunately, at the economic level, we see that in the UK, there is high inflation, rising tax burden, and also supply chains are hanging in the balance. There is lack of productivity, also because of the lack of domestic labor. which was all brought about by Brexit. And this brought about a fall in investment and a decline in GDP. So data show that imports from the UK to the European Union and also vice versa have drastically declined. And according to the OECD, the UK will be the tail end over the next 2 years of GDP growth. But this is a scenario that we cannot afford for long because our stability is tied to that of the United Kingdom, strongly anchored to the destiny of the European continent and the transatlantic friendship. So it is essential that London, as a champion of the values of liberal democracy, continues to act as an influential geopolitical player with a strong role in the world. The European Union is particularly interested in the question of the border between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And even if a single element of the protocol, of the agreement, which is so crucial, is changed, this would have a huge impact on the destiny of relations between the UK and the rest of the European continent. So we would like to wish good luck to the Vice President of the Commission, because Great Britain, the UK, for Italy, as for many other countries of the European Union, is a topic as a country of high priority. Only in the municipality of London, we have more Italian citizens than in the city of Bologna. So the increase in red tape in the UK for EU citizens is a worrying factor for both our citizens and for our businessmen. So good luck for your work and for your mission. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. And the next speaker is Gabriela Crețu of Romania. Senet, of course.
Good afternoon, everybody from Bucharest. Vice President, dear Maros, dear colleagues, once again, I'd like to appreciate the Czech presidency initiative to organize these informal meetings. I have attended all of them, I suppose, by now. Even regretting the UK decision 6 years ago, I belong to those thinking that for European Union, Brexit could have been that kind of crisis which can be taken as an opportunity for reshaping itself, at least in two directions, strategic autonomy and building social, a stronger social pillar due to the political balance change. You lost the opportunity, unfortunately, for many reasons, not only being its will. But I used to follow closely what is happening when an important member, a winner of internal market, like UK, with such an administrative capacity nobody almost has in the European Union, decides to leave. I followed not only European Commission assessments, political parties in Britain, British academic field, those 1 million Romanian living there. And it looks like everything got badly, at least economically. It looks like Brexit being a kind of elite project voted by the losers of neoliberal policies. our concerns about North Ireland and the possibility or impossibility of keeping a FRIDA agreement looks like being correct. Or I have a question, a problem here. The issue cannot be solved by bureaucracy because at the moment it looks like it came different political parties doesn't know what it they want, because including in the Conservative Party campaigning for Brexit in 2016, I found a lot of people willing to join again in a kind of at least internal market European Union. So do European Commission speaks with different political groups in UK when negotiating the future of our relations, because only the governments, it looks not very effective as long as it changed the position. And it's not about being in European Union or outside the European Union, it's how to sell this decision to the citizens, or strengthening or not strengthening the relation. It's, I repeat, the main issue is how for Britain, how to sell the new position to its citizens. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. And without having an ambition to interfere into the UK's affairs, well, you can just have a look at the tomorrow's decision of the Supreme Court regarding Scotland. But, you know, this is something that goes beyond our discussion, of course. Marie Didier has the floor.
It's what I learned from...
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Non, c'est un orateur, mais ce n'est pas grave. Merci, Monsieur le Président. Merci, Monsieur le Commissaire. Je serai très rapide au regard de une première question. Le gouvernement britannique a demandé à la Commission européenne de réintégrer les chercheurs britanniques dans le programme de recherche Horizon Europe. Je voulais savoir quelle était la position de la Commission à cet égard. Deuxième sujet, nous avons constaté 40 000 traversées de migrants dans la Manche, entre les rivages de la Manche en France et ceux de la Grande-Bretagne. Les deux pays ont eu des discussions, des avancées ont eu lieu. Mais la question migratoire est une question européenne et je voulais savoir quelle était la position du commissaire sur ce sujet et comment il comptait en discuter avec les Britanniques. Troisième élément, je reviendrai sur la question du protocole. Je vous ai trouvé, monsieur le commissaire, extrêmement optimiste. Pourtant, le parlementaire conservateur britannique a rappelé leur attachement au Brexit. Le Premier ministre lui-même a été amené à faire des déclarations sur le sujet. Aussi, le texte étant toujours en discussion à Westminster, quelles sont les lignes rouges de la Commission? Quels sont les éléments au-delà desquels vous n'irez pas dans la négociation avec nos partenaires britanniques? Je vous remercie.
Well, thank you for your comments. And you know, if actually I am correct, I hope that I am, you know, the next speaker is Lennart Jaffe.
No, he apologized. Please give the floor to Mr. Shevchovich.
Okay. Thank you very much. I hope you can hear me well. Is it working? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for this very timely debate. I just would like to apologize that not all of the speakers we could respond in the detail, because in some cases the signal was not the best one. But I will do my best to kind of go through through the major point. Indeed, as you kindly pointed out, as a former Czechoslovak diplomat, I can testify to the fact that Czech and Slovaks remain brothers despite our well-wet breakup some years ago, and that I think we never had better relationship than we have right now. And of course, this is something what we would like to explore, that if there is indeed a need to take separate ways, it should be done in friendship, in a good relationship, and in the best possible of spirits. And indeed, I think, as you rightly pointed out, Mr. Chairman, and I think this was the point which was very much echoed also by Mr. Giulio Maria and Mr. Alessandro Giglio from Italy, that indeed we have to look at our UK partners as our eternal neighbors, as our big trade partners, and as our strategic allies, with whom we have a lot common, and especially this time of global challenges, when the war returned to our continent. Indeed, our preference here in EU clearly would be to work on the strategic issues, on the global challenges, like war, like peace, like democracy, like climate change, like promoting our common shared values across the globe, and to kind of close the chapter of Brexit and open a new chapter of the good partnership and relationship with the UK. That's of course what is our spirit with which we are entering in every negotiation round, in every talk, and we of course hope that this would bring the fruits. Madame Le Gris was inquiring what is the new mood music with the new prime minister. I have to say that the prime minister, Rishi Sunak, had very good first meeting with Ursula von der Leyen. They've been, of course, meeting at different occasions, be it G20, be it COP. We have seen that Mr. Sunak paid one of his first visits to Ukraine to confirm the steadfast support of UK to Ukraine, which I think is very, very important. And I have to say that we have much better tonality and atmospherics in our conversations with my new partner, Foreign Secretary James Cleverly. So, of course, it kind of improves the atmosphere. It creates a much better atmosphere. Has it already materialized in our concrete talks? Unfortunately, this I cannot say yet. So we still hope this will happen. We have, I would say, quite narrow a window of opportunity. We are permanently calling upon our British partners to engage with us, to work on common joint solutions, and to avoid unilateral measures, which been very much unfortunately present in our relationship. You would all remember internal market bill. You would all remember different kind of unilateral measures in the course of the last year. And of course, it was all kind of culminated in, for us, absolutely, totally unacceptable Northern Ireland bill, because if this bill is adopted, then of course we'll be having totally different conversation. We've been talking about retaliation. We've been talking about court. We've been talking about looking on all the measures we can deploy under trade and cooperation agreement, because it's so closely linked and based on the withdrawal agreement, and it would definitely dampen the atmosphere, and I'm sure trade between EU and UK, and we want to avoid it at all costs, because I think that people in Northern Ireland deserve better. I think people in Ireland deserve better. And I think that also our global challenges I was just referring to require that we would work as a strategic partners and strategic allies. Madame Le Grip and also Madame Tang, you've been asking what we do with our legal action, where we are with our infringements. As you know, we started with several of them. They take their course. In some of them, we are in correspondence with our UK partners. But we decided not to do this last step to go straight to the European Court of Justice because we wanted to create the space for a negotiation. Doesn't mean that we are not going to do it or that we are hesitant. We just want to show our goodwill to create space for negotiations because I think this still can bring better results than to go through court cases, arbitrations. But as I said, I mean, if we would end up in that unfortunate situation with, let's say, Northern Ireland bill adopted, which is completely negating and infringing upon all the agreements we've been negotiating with our British partners for years and ratified just a year and a half ago, then of course nobody should be surprised that we would look for all kind of recourses we have at our disposal that they will be fully used. Madame Tanguy was asking about the fisheries. So from the top of my head, because we spent quite some time and very, very intense and fruitful, I have to say, and mutually extremely supportive time when we've been working very closely with the French authorities, with the French at that time, Madam Minister responsible for fisheries. So right now we have almost 2,000 licenses granted to the EU fishermen and fisherwomen. There are, I would say, very, very few pending cases. And currently, we are in the next round of the discussion with our UK partners on so-called TAC, which is the Brussels abbreviation for Total Allowable Catch, where, of course, we are cooperating very, very closely with the French authorities. So we know about your concerns concerning the possible technical limitations. And I just would like to assure you that my colleague, Commissioner Virginijus Sinkevičius, who is responsible for this, and DG Mare, who leads the negotiation, which is our Directorate General for Fisheries, are in permanent contact with French authorities. And I hope that as we did the last year, also this year, we'll manage to find the good solution. Madame Denica Simeonova from Bulgaria was referring to European citizens' rights living in UK. This is, I think, the good chapter, positive one. We have 5.5 million Europeans living in UK. We managed to secure their rights. They are protected by the withdrawal agreement. We are still solving one or two issues, which are, of course, important for the European citizens who are living in UK. I do not want to bore you with the detail. It's kind of pre-settlement and settlement procedures. So we want to make sure that nobody who has a right for stay and residence in UK would be deprived of the right, but simply some kind of technical omission or by some kind of bureaucratic procedure. So this one, we communicate with our UK partners. In one case, a so-called independent monitoring authority, which is kind of looking after the interests of EU citizens in UK, decided to go to court in UK because they're not happy with one particular aspect of certain UK law. And of course, we are very supportive of every possibility to make sure that rights of EU citizens in UK are properly protected. And we are doing our utmost to protect the rights of UK citizens in the EU and are in frequent contact with other member states to clarify any issues which might be there. With Mr. Antono Hoch, writer, we had already our discussion on these issues, and I think he has very valid point. And as I said in my introductory remarks, under no circumstances we are going to put in danger our integrity of the single market, our integrity of the European Union. For us, this is absolute no-go, totally red line. And of course, the protocol on Ireland and Northern Ireland was kind of squaring of the circle where we wanted to promote the peace as much as possible on the island of Ireland, where we found a solution how to avoid the hard border on the island, and where for the first time, and I'm sure for the last time in the history of the European Union, we actually outsource the customs checks and controls to third party, which in this case is UK. And for us, it's very important that this is done in accordance with the proper rules. We have different kind of ways how to do that. We can do a lot of it remotely. We can do a lot of it in a very practical way through the access to the IT. But what is absolutely important for us is that we know what is entering our single market. We want to make sure that the goods are properly checked, that they are safe from the public, animal health point of view, from the point of acting all our internal international obligations. And this is, of course, one of the sticky points, because for us to make sure that the internal market is protected is of the key priority. And therefore, we negotiated the withdrawal agreement and protocol in such a great detail. And on one side, we are ready to take care of handle so-called unintended consequences of some of the stipulations of the protocol. But on the other hand, for us, the priority objective is to make sure that the integrity of the single market is protected. And it's done in a way that we are avoiding the, of course, the hard border on the island of Ireland. So therefore, I hope that also our UK partners would understand that if they would not work with us, they are putting in danger this enormous achievement of the protocol, which is actually opening the access to single market for the people in Northern. Ireland. Madam Creţu, was a very active participant, so I confirm that in all EU-UK discussions. Indeed, there I think what is also very very important to see is that despite all the recent evidence and recent data, I think that despite of all that, you could see that I would say main political parties in the UK, they differ in many things, but they both are very clear that they have no plans to consider rejoining the single market or to join the customs union. I think it's very clear for the both parties. So I think the best we can get is the trade agreement we have with the UK, which of course has its limitations, which would never replace the single market, because we are working with four freedoms, and never the free trade agreement can give you the same comfort, the same frictionless movement of goods, capitals, and labor. And this is, I have to say, the very converging the view among the political parties in UK. If it comes to Northern Ireland, there we are talking on a regular basis to all leaders of all political parties which been represented in Stormont, to understand better, to show that we listen, we care, we come with proactive, creative solutions. I think it was appreciated. We need to do more of that in the future. And of course, if you are talking about international agreements, we have to be very clear that we respect constitutional arrangements, we respect the territorial integrity, sovereignty of our partner, and we also respect who is our interlocutor, who negotiates with us, and this is UK government. So they are the partners with whom we have to negotiate. We do that. We do it in a good faith, and I hope, as I said, that our efforts will be reciprocated and materialized. And I think that the last question which I noted down was from Monsieur Didier from France. First, he asked about Horizon Europe. Here, what I want to say is that you will understand that after you know, such an important agreement, which we have negotiated in a great effort, signed, ratified, so they could be immediately, almost immediately, breached by the UK, that there is only limited appetite on the EU side to negotiate another agreement when we have such a bad experience with signing agreements with the UK. So what we say, the first what we need is to restore the trust in respecting what we have signed and proper implementation, and then we can, of course, look at all other issues as well. What I want to say, and this is very important, the fact that they are not associated country to the Horizon Europe program in no way is limiting the UK scientists, the UK universities in participating in our research programs. There is one significant difference, and the difference is that this time they have to pay for it themselves, because simply that was their decision. And there is one more issue that, of course, because they are not associated partner, they cannot lead the consortia. So it's not about participation, because they can participate, but it's about covering the cost. And of course, we are not going to cover these costs, because the decision of the UK was very clear. They didn't want to be part of that. So all this would have to be negotiated, but we would be ready for negotiations when we would kind of clean the desk, clean the slate, clarify the situation, restore the trust, and then to proceed with further negotiation. On the issue of migration, there, what I want to say is that this was not part of the TCA. There was only one area covered, and this was the operational cooperation between the law enforcement authorities. This works pretty well, and we are very much encouraged by the recent good exchanges between UK and France, and the bilateral understandings which have been achieved there. And of course, we would be very much supportive of that. And now, Mr. Chairman, if you allow me, I would need to rush, because we have a very busy day here in Brussels. We just had the Energy Council meeting, and I still have some meetings to attend to, because you probably heard that I should also look after how we would operationalize our common gas purchase platform. And I know that I have a minister who is already waiting for me, so I would need to rush to that next meeting. But I really would like to thank you very much for this opportunity, to thank for all the questions, and to apologize that I have to run.
Well, thank you so much. We are very grateful that you have devoted to us so much time. Of course, you know, everybody knows that we are going through very turbulent times, and that you are in a rush and you are attending other very important meetings. So thank you for us all, for your participation and very detailed answers to our questions. Thank you so much, and hope to see you, you know, not only on the plane from Brussels to Vienna, but maybe you know, on some other occasions. Thank you so much, Mr. Commissioner.
It will be my pleasure. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Well, dear colleagues, the Commissioner, you know, definitely, obviously, is on leave, you know, for obvious reasons. I just would like to ask you, you know, there was a demand to continue our discussions on this platform on the role of the national parliaments within the European Union. I don't see anybody registered for the discussion, but of course, you know, the floor is yours. So if there is someone that would like to continue and add some remarks, opinions, or ideas on the role of national parliaments and some possible amendments to this issue, feel free to just, you know, take the floor.
Yeah, Mr. Chair?
Yes, you have the floor.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much indeed. I didn't know that we would have this opportunity to continue our discussion and our exchanges and come to that new topic, which is fundamental topic from my point of view, which is the involvement and the role and the competences of the national parliaments within the decision-making process and within the European Union institutions. If you allow me, I'll switch to my native language, to French, to continue my little statement. Sur ce sujet important, j'ai été membre de la conférence sur l'avenir de l'Europe au titre de représentante de l'Assemblée nationale française durant l'année dernière, et je suis très attentive à ce que peut être maintenant la suite donnée à cette conférence sur l'avenir de l'Europe et les préconisations et propositions qu'elle a portées. J'ai cru comprendre, parce que je l'ai appris hier de manière un petit peu improvisée, qu'il y avait très bientôt, c'est-à-dire la semaine prochaine à Bruxelles, une conférence, un moment où se retrouvent un certain nombre des participants à la conférence sur l'avenir de l'Europe pour faire le point de l'état d'avancement des dossiers différents et variés qui avaient été portés par la conférence sur l'avenir de l'Europe, et que ça n'est que très très tardivement, un peu à la dernière minute, que les parlements nationaux, en tout cas que des délégations des parlements nationaux ont été conviées à venir participer à cette conférence à Bruxelles. Il semblerait que dans l'organisation, les représentants des parlements nationaux aient été un peu oubliés. Et je crois que c'est lors de la dernière réunion de la COSAC à Prague que le sujet est venu, et que les représentants des parlements nationaux, les membres de la COSAC, ont fait savoir qu'ils souhaitaient pouvoir être associés, et peut-être même plus que cela, participer à ce genre de point de rencontre. Voilà, donc je voulais simplement tirer parti, si je puis dire, de cet petit épisode pour réinsister sur l'importance d'être toujours très, très partie prenante et de toujours défendre notre rôle, notre place et les compétences qui peuvent nous être octroyées dans les processus décisionnels européens. Bien sûr, le lien entre nos parlements nationaux et nos exécutifs, nos gouvernements, est essentiel, mais il y a également ce que nous pouvons faire sans jamais entrer en concurrence avec le Parlement européen, sans jamais entrer en compétition avec nos chers collègues du Parlement européen. J'ai siégé pendant 8 ans au Parlement européen, donc je me garderai bien de confondre les rôles ou de vouloir organiser une compétition artificielle qui serait tout à fait ridicule, mais je pense important que nous puissions toujours occuper tout l'espace et toute la place qui est la nôtre. Il y a le sujet de la Green Card qui a été beaucoup débattu, dont je pense qu'il faut que nous puissions voir les aspects positifs, les aspects constructifs dans un avenir, j'espère, le plus proche possible. Voilà, je ne veux pas être trop longue, mais je voulais juste tirer parti de cette opportunité que vous nous donnez pour partager ce sentiment et dire 2-3 choses. Merci beaucoup, Monsieur le Président.
Thank you so much for your comment. Well, during the latest meeting of COSAC in Prague, we discussed this issue quite in detail. And well, there was, I would almost say, an outrage of representatives of the national parliaments for not being invited to the meeting that is going to take place early in December. And I don't know whether it was our pressure or, you know, what happened, but all of a sudden, you know, we received the invitation during our session. So definitely national parliaments are participating in this meeting on the future of the European Union, I think, which is very crucial for us, of course. So I fully agree with the arguments saying that we should be really, you know, making our way through the European area, you know, to be heard and seen. So yeah, this is going to happen. Of course, you know, not only in the light of the Russian aggression in Ukraine, but let's say also in other very unfortunate circumstances, you know, we are facing right now, the national parliaments are extremely important and need to be listened to. It varies from country to country, but in my country, in the Czech Republic, the Committee on European Affairs, both in the Chamber of Deputies and in the Senate, play quite an important role. The main task which is assigned to our work is to scrutinize the work and decision making of our governments in the very important decision making institution, which is either the European Council and Council of Europe. And you know, we do our best to do that. So now I am maybe for some, you know, going to play the devil's advocate a little bit, but I think the role of national parliaments, respectively, the role of committees on European affairs, is very much depends on the role of national parliaments within the parliamentary structure and functioning of respective states. So, of course, I am actually, this is my third consecutive term as the chair of the Committee of European Affairs. I am sort of an alien in the Czech Republic. You know, it doesn't happen really very often that an MP is not only member, that, but even, you know, let alone the chair of any committee. You know, and I'm chair of the Committee of the European Affairs for the third time in my country. And I am really doing my best. I hope that, you know, I am doing my best to elevate the role of my committee within the functioning of the Czech Republic in respect with our European affairs. So my best piece of advice to all of you is, put, you know, as much pressure as you can on your governments to take you into consideration, rather than, you know, trying to, you know, use this bypass through the European level, because, you know, we have our responsibility, and it's our governments that, you know, have a huge say in the collective decision making. So please do it, and I really ask you, do it. Really, you know, do not neglect this. So that is my answer. Well, I don't see anybody. I see. I see Gabriela.
Dear colleagues, I am a Romanian alien. I was misunderstood in the last session. UK is an important partner for my country, a very important one, being the country chosen by 1 million Romanian there. We have to respect what we have decided, but we have to learn from UK experience not to repeat it. using escape goats instead of solutions. This was the idea. European Union in this case. So I am worried as a member of the National Parliament and former member of the European Parliament about the fate of democracy as we have understood it and wished it. European democracy cannot be stronger than our national democracy, or liberal democracy has political parties as the main agents of change. I was a member, as my colleague as well, of the Conference on the Future of Europe. And I do believe that it was a big confusion there, trying to replace elected political representatives with other representatives selected on other criteria. I haven't understood very well the criteria used, but speaking about participative democracy, it's not participative democracy, unfortunately. I'd like to be participative democracy. I like to every party to be involved in order to find solutions, because European Union has huge problems, and to explain the good parts to almost every citizens, or if we analyze a bit all member states, there is a huge success of Eurosceptic parties in almost every member state, And we have to deal with this reality as national parliaments. Or was something we have to be aware of, some mistakes as well in Brussels, being led through and by crisis, migration, financial crisis, health, war, climate, economic, European Commission applied what we have ever criticized, a kind of short-term thinking and bureaucratic solutions, not having time enough to for the parties, because they used to speak directly with citizens to explain to citizens these measures or to correct them. I do believe, as you believe, I suppose as well, that we have focused too much in subsidiarity issues, and it became something bureaucratic. We check every piece of law, not controlling enough our governments in their decisions at the European level, and there is a kind of gap between what we say in our capitals and what our representatives, governmental representatives, decides many times in Brussels. Or we have to deal with this gap, because otherwise our future is in danger. It's not only selling on TV, organizing this kind of media events. It's about finding solutions. And the main solution now is finding peace, I suppose, in order to keep European Union, that European Union we loved and we enjoyed with joy because of being a peaceful project. So if you want to ask me everything about national parliaments during the latest 18 years only, I did this work trying to explain European Parliament to national parliament, national parliaments to European Parliament, and trying as well to focus on what we have to change, not in perhaps it looks more a negative thinking, but it's not like this. We have to find solutions and to change what it doesn't work, not only to avoid and speak only about the good part of our activity or of our influence. Look at the event on the 2nd of December. We have no time to speak with the others. We are nobody concerning the Conference on the Future of Europe. Those being members know very well this issue. Thank you.
Well, thank you a lot. In my understanding, I am definitely a great fan of increasing the influence of national parlaments in the EU issues. As I told you, this is my third term, so I was actually chair of my committee when my party was in the coalition as well as in the opposition. So I in fact experienced both roles, and I believe that actually our debate at the at the EU level among our committees of COSAC, let's say, is extremely important. But at the same time, we should not downplay or sort of ignore put less significance to the discussion between the parliamentary dimension the parliamentary level and the governmental level, because the governments are extremely important in the decision making, extremely important, but I think, in my opinion, they are in many respects more important, and they have more powers than the European Parliament, for example. They, it's the national parliaments who select the members of the European Commission. So this, at least, indirect role is just really very great. So we should not downplay or put less significance to the link between the national parliaments and the national governments. Because, of course, then when you select or elect the people who are at helm at the European level, they have a lot of powers. They are really very powerful. But it's to a huge degree the responsibility of our governments. And at the same time, the national parliaments, who are the people who are given the power? So actually, that is my message. Of course, I am not going to downplay or challenge your opinion. I think that to a huge degree, we are definitely in line. But we also have to realize the importance that is given to us by our elected mandate, and just let's use it before we start putting too much pressure on the European level. So that is just my message and an observation that I was able to sort of inquire, through the years of my position.
Mine is the same.
Well, I don't see anybody who would like to speak. Yes, no, nobody. So then, I would like to thank you very much for your participation and conversation and putting your inputs into our discussion. And I hope that the upcoming Swedish presidency will move our discussion and all the issues we have on the table forward. So thank you so much. Have a great evening and see you soon. Well, probably with most of you in Stockholm, maybe Brussels.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.